Chapter 11. Roll of thunder, hear my cry. Over the water, by and by, old man coming down the line, whip in hand to beat me down. But I ain't gonna let him turn me round. The night whispered of distant thunder. It was muggy, hot, a miserable night for sleeping. Twice I had awakened, hoping that it was time to be up, but each time the night had been total blackness with no hint of a graying dawn. On the front porch, Mr. Morrison sat singing soft and low into the long night, chanting to the approaching thunder. He had been there since the house had darkened after church, watching and waiting as he had done every night since Papa had been injured. No one had ever explained why he watched and waited, but I knew. It had to do with the Wallaces. Mr. Morrison's song faded, and I guessed he was on his way to the rear of the house. He would stay there for a while, walking on cat's feet through the quiet yard, then eventually return to the front porch again. Unable to sleep, I resigned myself to await his return by counting states. Miss Crocker had had a big thing about states, and I sometimes found that if I pretended that she was naming them off, I could fall asleep. I decided to count the states geographically rather than alphabetically. That was more of a challenge. I had gotten as far west as the Dakotas when my silent recitation was disturbed by a tapping on the porch. I lay very still. Mr. Morrison never made sounds like that. There it was again. Cautiously, I climbed from the bed, careful not to waken Big Ma, who was still snoring soundly, and crept to the door. I pressed my ear against the door and listened, then slipped the latch furiously and darted outside. "Boy, what you doing here?" I hissed. "Hey, Cassie, would you keep it down?" whispered TJ, invisible in the darkness. Then he tapped lightly on the boy's door again, calling softly, "Hey, Stacy, come on, wake up, will you? Let me in." The door swung open, and TJ slipped inside. I pulled my own door closed and followed him. I'm in trouble, Stacy," he said. "I mean, I'm really in trouble." "That ain't nothing new," I remarked. "What you coming here for?" whispered Stacy icily. "Go get R.W. and Melvin to get you out of it." In the darkness, there was a low sob, and TJ, hardly sounding like TJ, mumbled, "They the ones got me in it. Where's the bed? I gotta sit down." In the darkness, he groped for the bed, his feet dragging as if he could hardly lift them. "I ain't no bed," I exclaimed as his hands fell on me. There was a deep sigh. Stacy clicked on the flashlight, and TJ found the bed, sitting down slowly and holding his stomach as if he were hurt. "What's the matter?" Stacy asked, his voice wary.
"R.W. and Melvin," whispered TJ. "They hurt me bad."
He looked up, expecting sympathy, but our faces, grim behind the light Stacy held, showed no compassion. TJ's eyes dimmed. Then, undoing the buttons to his shirt, he pulled the shirt open and stared down at his stomach. I grimaced and shook my head at the sight.
"Lord, TJ," Stacy exclaimed in a whisper, "what happened?"
TJ didn't answer at first, staring in horror at the deep blue-black swelling of his stomach and chest.
"I think something's busted," he gasped finally. "I heard something awful." "Why'd they do it?" asked Stacy.
TJ looked up into the bright light.
"Help me, Stacy. Help me get home. I can't make it by myself."
"Tell me how come they did this to you."
Cause, I said I was gonna tell what happened."
Stacy and I looked at each other, then together leaned closer to TJ.
"Tell what?" we asked.
TJ gulped and leaned over, his head between his legs.
I'm sick, Stacy. I gotta get home for my daddy wake up. He say I stay away from that house one more night, he gonna put me out, and he mean it too. He put me out, I got no place to go. You gotta help me."
"Tell us what happened." TJ began to cry.
But they said they'd do worse than this if I ever told.
Well, I ain't about to go nowhere unless I know what happened, said Stacy with finality. TJ searched Stacy's face in the rim of ghostly light cast by the flashlight. Then he told his story. After he and the Simmses left Great Faith, they went directly into Strawberry to get the pearl-handled pistol. But when they arrived, the mercantile was already closed. The Simmses said that there was no sense in coming back for the pistol. They would simply go in and take it. TJ was frightened at the thought, but the Simmses assured him that there was no danger. If they were caught, they would simply say that they needed the pistol that night but intended to pay for it on Monday. In the storage room at the back of the store was a small open window through which a child or a person as thin as TJ could wiggle. After waiting almost an hour after the lights had gone out in the Barnett's living quarters on the second floor, TJ slipped through the window and opened the door, and the Simmses entered, their faces masked with stockings and their hands gloved. TJ, now afraid that they had something else in mind, wanted to leave without the pistol, but R.W. had insisted that he have it. R.W. broke the lock of the gun case with an axe and gave TJ the much-longed-for gun. Then R.W. and Melvin went over to a wall cabinet and tried to break off the brass lock. After several unsuccessful minutes, R.W. swung the axe sharply against the lock, and it gave. But as Melvin reached for the metal box inside, Mr. Barnett appeared on the stairs, a flashlight in his hand, his wife behind him. For a long moment, no one moved or said a word as Mr. Barnett shone the light directly on TJ, then on R.W. and Melvin, their faces darkened by the stockings. When Mr. Barnett saw the cabinet lock busted, he flew into frenzied action, hopping madly down the stairs and trying to grab the metal box from Melvin. They struggled, with Mr. Barnett getting the better of Melvin, until R.W. whopped Mr. Barnett solidly on the head from behind with the flat of the axe, and Mr. Barnett slumped into a heap upon the floor as if dead. When Mrs. Barnett saw her husband fall, she dashed across the room and flailed into R.W., crying, "You niggers done killed Jim Lee. You done killed him." R.W., trying to escape her grasp, slapped at her, and she fell back, hitting her head against one of the stoves, and didn't move.